The seventh seal has been broken open. There's silence in heaven. There are seven angels standing before the throne of God, and each angel has a trumpet in his hand. These trumpet judgments are going to bring judgment upon the earth because God is angry with sin that has taken place, and especially those who have been martyred for the faith. And so we see when the first angel blows his trumpet, a third of the vegetation is burned up. The second angel blows his trumpet, and a third of the sea life is killed. The third angel blows his trumpet, and a third of the rivers and well water become poisoned and people die. And the fourth angel blows his trumpet, and a third of the lights of all the luminaries in the sky grow dim, and the earth gets very cold, and people are freezing to death. And I can just imagine all the ecologists and scientists coming together. What has happened to global warming? It has gone amok. Remember, last Sunday was Earth Day. And we're going to see more pollution on the earth than has ever been on the earth when we study what we're going to study tonight. But we see when the four angels have blown the first four trumpets, then we read this, verse 13 of chapter 8. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound." Actually, the word that is translated angel should be translated eagle, and that's what it really is in the Greek text. But most of your translations, I believe, translate the word angel when actually it's the word eagle. We don't know that the eagle is a bird of prey. We do know in various books of the Old Testament, like Jeremiah, for example, that the eagle is used as a bird of judgment. But translators also have seen the need to translate this as an angel. I don't know whether it's an angel or whether it's an eagle. The important thing is what is being said. Woe, woe, woe. The inhabitants of the earth are about to have it because the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels are about to sound. So, what we're going to look at tonight is the first woe, the blast of the fifth angel's trumpet. So, let's look at, first of all, in your notes, the devil and the bottomless pit. And we're going to look at the verse 1, verse 2, and verse 11. Notice the appearance of a fallen star. It says, "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit." So here we have a fallen star. And the question is, what is this fallen star? Well, I know it's not a meteorite, it's not an asteroid, though certainly in our study we have seen where meteorites and asteroids have been used by God to bring judgment on the earth, but that's not the situation here. The reason why I say that is because of the word "him," which is mentioned. "And I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key of the bottomless pit." We know in the books of Job and Daniel, they both speak of angels as stars. And here in Revelation chapter 9, I believe the fallen star is none other than Lucifer himself. Now, that word Lucifer means day star, also means son of the morning. And you know that Lucifer is none other than the devil himself. And you know those stories in Ezekiel chapter 28, Isaiah chapter 14 of the war in heaven. How, for example, in Ezekiel chapter 28, it speaks of Lucifer as being the strongest and most prominent angel in heaven. And he was given the position of guarding the holiness of God. He was the angel that stood in the presence of God. That's how significant he was. But, of course, he got a big head. He thought, I can overthrow the government of God. I can take over. I can sit on his throne. And so he was such a charismatic angel that he rallied a third of the angels in heaven. And there's a war that takes place in heaven. We read that in Isaiah 14. And Michael, gathers the rest of the angels together to do battle against him, and finally he's cast out of heaven along with a third of the angels. Remember, Jesus said, "I saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning." There's another reason why we know this falling star is an angel. It's because of verse 11 in Revelation chapter 9. Notice what it says. "And they had as king over them," we're going to see that "they" refers to demonic locusts, but we've not talked about them yet. "But they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon." So you see, he's named Abaddon, Apollyon, which means destroyer in both of those languages. Satan is the destroyer. Satan wanted to destroy God, but he couldn't do it. Satan wanted to destroy Christ, but he couldn't do it. Satan wants to destroy the nation of Israel, but he's not going to be able to do it. Satan wants to destroy your faith. Satan wants to steal your salvation, but he's not going to be able to do it. But Satan is the great destroyer nonetheless, and that's the reason why we see such evil on the face of the earth today. I don't know whether this is true or not, but it really aggravated me. I was looking at the YouTube, and there is an announcement that Governor Brown plans on banning the Bible in the state of California, where it cannot be sold in any bookstore any longer. It goes right along with legislation which has already been passed. See, that if a pastor speaks out against gay marriage, speaks out against homosexual activity, speaks out against gender neutrality, he can be fined or put in jail. All we need now is the Senate of the state of California to pass that and Governor Brown to sign it. I'm telling you, there's evil in the state of California. There's evil in this world, and Satan is behind every bit of it. You know, and we as Christians had better wake up. If we don't, we're in trouble.
He's also got a bill right now against the homeschoolers that's about to pass.
Yeah, the homeschool.
All the parents in jail if they homeschool their kids.
So you can see where we are today. That's against the homeschoolers. Parents will be put in jail, in case you didn't hear what she was saying. I mean, that could pass as well. I can't see banning the Bible, but then I don't know. What are they going to do? I would think Christians will really rise up. Maybe he needs to do that to really see what we as Christians stand for. But anyway, I just want you to know there's evil in the world, and Satan is the great destroyer, and he's destroying this state. He's destroying our nation. He's destroying the world. And that's why the Apostle Paul tells us to abhor what is evil and to cling to what is good. Because Satan stands for everything that is the opposite of good. He represents everything that is evil. And that's why we find so many people today calling good evil and evil good. That's the world we live in today. Notice the authority of this star. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. So Satan is given a key. Now, when you have a key to something, you have authority over that which you have the key to. You all in your pocket or purse have a key to your house. So you can lock your house door. You can open it. You have authority over your house because you have a key to the door. Same is true with your car. Anything you have a key to, you have authority over. We're seeing now that Satan has the key to the bottomless pit. Now in Revelation chapter 1 verse 18, Jesus said this, "I have the keys to Hades and death." I have the keys, says Jesus, to Hades and death. Hades and death, that's a pit. That's the same as the bottomless pit. So here's the picture I have. We'll just kind of envision it in our mind. Jesus has this big keychain, all these keys on it, because he has authority over everything. But he takes off from that key ring the key to Hades and death. He takes off from that key ring the key to the bottomless pit, and he hands that key to Satan. And he says, now, you have authority over the bottomless pit.
What a prize, huh?
Yeah. Now, in Luke chapter 8, you have an interesting story. You have Jesus and his disciples in the territory known as the Gerasene. And the people there were the Gerasenes. It's on the east northern part of the Sea of Galilee, Gadara. You remember there was a demonic individual there. He had many, many demons within him. And when Jesus approached him, those demons immediately recognized him. And they said, do not cast us into the pit. So those demons knew something about a pit. And remember now that Satan has just been given the key to the bottomless pit. Well, what happened to those demons inside that demoniac? Well, there was some swine on the hillside. And those demons entered the swine. The swine ran down the hill into the Sea of Galilee and probably drowned. But there you have your first deviled ham. Thought I'd lighten it up a little, maybe. This is a somber lesson. Now, the question is, what is this pit? It has been described as a shaft that runs down to the belly of the earth. It is a pit where certain demons reside. It is the abode of fallen demons who have been kept incarcerated. Now, let's give a little review of things here. We've talked about Satan and demons being cast out of heaven. We saw that in Isaiah chapter 14. Where do they reside? Well, Satan is called the prince of the power of the air. Satan dwells in the atmosphere. These demons that were cast out dwell in the atmosphere. There are millions and millions and millions of these spirit demons. You cannot see them with your eyes because they are in spirit form, but they exist in the atmosphere. And these demons have different powers to them. There are some demons that are stronger than others. There are some demons that are more evil than others. For example, in Matthew chapter 12, Jesus talks about a man who has a demon within him, and he says if that demon is exorcised, if that demon leaves that man, he goes out into the desert, into a dry place. And if that man is open to the demons returning, that demon brings with him seven demons stronger than himself. More evil, he says, than himself. So there are some demons that are more evil than other demons. That's a thing we need to understand. Now, these demons also have various rankings. I suppose those rankings are based upon their evilness and upon their strength. Paul says this in Ephesians chapter 6, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. So you notice there are various realms within the heavens where these demons reside and operate. Some are called principalities, and some are called powers, and some are called rulers of darkness, and some are called spiritual hosts of wickedness. But there are demons also in the bottomless pit, because we said there are some demons that are far more evil than others. So, some demons dwell in the atmosphere, some demons dwell in the bottomless pit, which Satan has just been given the key to. Now, what did these angels do that deserved to be cast into the bottomless pit? Well, notice first of all, 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. For God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell. Actually, the word there is tartarosis. Or we'll just use the word Tartarus because that's how it comes out in English. But cast them down to hell or Tartarus and deliver them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment. Now, the reason why your translations use the word hell and not Tartarus, unless you have a much more recent translation, is that the word Tartarus was really unknown to those who were translating the scriptures. They could not find this Greek word in any kind of Greek mythology, any kind of classical Greek. And so when they came across trying to translate this back in the year 1611, for example, the old King James, that's when it was translated, they didn't know what to do with this word. And so what they did is they translated it hell. But it's not really the word that Jesus used when he talked about hell. Hell is always the word Gehenna. But this is the word Tartarus. Well, what is Tartarus? Well, let's first of all understand Gehenna. Remember, Jesus described hell as Gehenna. What was Gehenna? Gehenna was a garbage dump located outside the city of Jerusalem. And the fires burned perpetually. The smoke rose perpetually. Why? Well, you don't want to stick your nose in a garbage can. It stinks. And this garbage pit would stink. But more than that, in those days, if somebody simply could not afford a funeral to be buried, their bodies were cast into Gehenna and incinerated. And so now you have burnt flesh. So the fires are continually burning to get rid of that stench. Jesus said that's what hell's like. He also described it as a place of outer darkness. There's no place darker than being in the midst of a fire. He described it as a place where the worm dieth not, because there are little maggots that crawl around in there and able to escape the fire, but they can survive. Which shows that hell is a place of consciousness. So when Jesus describes hell, he gets it from the culture of the Jewish people. Peter, when he gets the word Tartarus, gets it out of Greek mythology. Because what the word means, it refers to a subterranean place lower than the grave where the most wicked and rebellious beings were sent to receive the worst and most severe punishment. So in Greek mythology, this idea of Tartarus was a pit in the heart of the earth where the most wicked people would end up. And now Peter is using this to speak about the place where demonic angels, angels so evil that they could not reside in the atmosphere, were cast. Some people think that Tartarus is the lower part of hell. If so, then that means that hell is in the heart of the earth. I don't know whether hell's in the heart of the earth. I've been there and I don't want to go there. Now the question is, what did these angels do that was so evil that they are locked up in this place called Tartarus, this pit, which might be in the very heart of the earth? A pit to which Satan now has the key to unlock. Got the picture? I think we have some answer in the book of Jude. Jude chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. There's only one chapter in the book, so you can say verses 6 and 7. Here it is. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain. So there's angels. What was their proper domain? Heaven. They did not keep their proper domain. These were the angels that sided with Lucifer in this war and were cast out of heaven. But left their own abode. He has reserved an everlasting chains under the darkness for the judgment of the great day. As Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them in a similar manner to these, having given themselves over, now get this, to sexual immorality and gone after strange flesh, are set forth as an example suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. So what do we have here? We have some angels who were so evil that they're cast into this pit. What did they do? They got involved in sexual immorality and they went after strange flesh. And he talks about Sodom and Gomorrah in the setting of this, does Jude? Now let's see if we can come to grips with this. Angels are spirit beings. Demons are spirit beings. Angels are sexless. Demons are sexless. But angels can materialize themselves to be like a human being and thus become a sexual being. For example, remember there in Genesis 19 when two angels visited Abraham and Sarah. Abraham didn't know they were angels. They were just strangers that were passing by. And Abraham says, "Hey, welcome to my abode here. Sarah, why don't you go fix some cakes? Let's give our stranger something to eat." So she goes and does the cooking, and these men who are actually angels eat. Remember what the book of Hebrews says in chapter 12? You need to entertain strangers. Because you may not realize that you are entertaining an angel. That's exactly what Abraham did. He entertained angels. Then what did they do? After they had their dinner, they went on to the city of Sodom, and they're visiting Lot. And what do we know about the city of Sodom? Well, there was a lot of gays in that city. And when they saw these two angels, or men, they're, "Wow, these are handsome dudes." And so Lot brings them in the house. And these men from the city come pounding on Lot's door. "Let us in. We want these men out." What did they want them for? They wanted to rape them. They wanted to have sex with them. These are men in the city of Sodom. But the point I'm wanting you to get out of this story is angels can materialize into human-like bodies, and you wouldn't know that you were entertaining an angel if you saw one. Remember what Lot did? He offered the men his daughters. That's a pretty stupid thing to do, but on the other hand, they were gay men, so they weren't interested in his daughters anyway, as far as any kind of sexual involvement is concerned. But anyway. You thought what?
Wrong story.
Now, this takes us to another chapter I want us to look at. I think we've talked a little bit about this in the past, maybe a long time ago, but I want you to understand what's happening here in our text. Because we need to understand, why are there certain demons in this pit that are not in the atmosphere? This pit that Satan has now the key to. Well, in Genesis chapter 6, you have the sons of God. The phrase sons of God in the book of Genesis refers to demons. That's a strange term. I don't understand why demons are called the sons of God, but that's what they're called. We know this from the book of Job. Remember that when Satan came and presented himself before God, he was accompanied by the sons of God. He was accompanied by demons in that story. So you have some sons of God, demons, who are looking upon the women of the world. This is back in pre-flood days. And they're saying, "Wow, these women are beautiful." So what do these sons of God do? They materialize themselves into human beings, into sexual beings, and they have sex with the women of the world. And the women get pregnant, and they give birth. And what was the child that came forth but a hybrid? A child that was part demon and part human. They were called the Nephilim. They were giants. The word Nephilim means the fallen ones. Maybe you'll understand why. But these Nephilim were absolutely evil men, but they were a hybrid. And as a result, they created such evil on the face of the earth that God decided to destroy the earth with a flood. Now, there's more than just the Nephilim. Of course, the text says how the thoughts and intents of men's heart were evil continually. So it was not just what the Nephilim did, it's what man did, but the Nephilim certainly created enough evil where God said, I have had enough, I am going to destroy the earth with a flood and save only Noah and his family. I believe, and that I think is what Jude is telling us here, is that the demons that materialized themselves into human beings and had sex with the women of the world, creating the Nephilim, were the demons that were so evil because of their sexual immorality and because they went after strange flesh, that those are the demons that ended up in Tartarus. Those are the demons that ended up in the pit in the lower part of hell. So now we understand what's in this pit. Immoral demons who went after strange flesh. All demons are immoral, but no demons did what these demons did that we would read about in Genesis chapter 6. So God was so angry, just says, hey, I'm going to destroy the earth with a flood. So let's get the picture now. Satan has fallen from heaven. Satan is probably the worst of all of them, but for some reason God allowed Satan to be the prince of the power of the air, to be the god of this world. There are demons who reside with him, trillions and trillions and trillions of demonic beings in the atmosphere, but there were some so evil, those demons that we talked about, those sons of God who materialized and had sex with the women of the world and created the Nephilim. Those are the demons that are cast into a bottomless pit. So we got the story now, right? We got the picture. Let's look now at verses 2 through 12. And you have the demonic locust ascending from the bottomless pit. I'm going to have to find a good place to take a break, because this will take us through the rest of the time. But we'll find a place to stop here. Notice the assignment of the star. This is the fallen star. This is Satan. And he opened the bottomless pit. So he had the key. He opens the bottomless pit. I can imagine Satan being very gleeful, because he's going to release the worst demons that ever existed. And he's going to feel, ha, ha, ha. Now I'm going to be able to accomplish what I want to accomplish. I'm going after the 144,000. I'm going to go after anybody who comes to faith in Jesus Christ. I'm going to give them a miserable time. Notice the ascent of smoke and demonic locusts that come. See this in verses 2 and 3. And smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Then out of the smoke locusts came upon the earth. So just get the picture. There's this pit. I don't know where it's located, but somewhere. And Satan unlocks it with the key that the Lord has given him, the key to Hades and death. And out belches black smoke. Smoke that just covers the air, blackens the sky. You can't even see the sun. The smoke is so thick. And also out come these locusts that have been confined in this place called Tartarus. One commentator put it like this. Picture what the world would be like if we were to open the doors of all the penitentiaries on earth and set free the world's most vicious and violent criminals, giving them free rein to practice their infamies upon mankind. Something worse than that lies in store for the world. Satan, cast out of heaven, is able to summon to his aid the most diabolical fiends in the abyss to act as his agents in bringing mankind to the footstool of the beast. The beast is the Antichrist. We haven't met him as the beast yet, but we will when we get to chapter 13. So we got a little ways to go before we're introduced to him in a different way. So you see, when the pit is opened, And it's the reaching down to the center of the earth. There's this molten lava that just pours out and just blackens the sky. You see, here's another attack on Mother Earth, right? Remember, we talked about an attack on Mother Earth last week. Hey, there's another attack on Mother Earth. And I can imagine there's a great deal of concern for the air quality management district, too. Because they've never seen smog like this before. But this really isn't smog. This is smoke from the pit of hell. I was raised in Glendora. Glendora is right against the San Gabriel Mountains, as I'm sure you know. And in my teenage days, I would go down to Finkbeiner Park. And every summer, I would play baseball. And whatever sport, I'd play football, I'd play basketball. I went down to Finkbeiner Park to play. I had a lot of friends, and we had a good time. But there were those summer days where the smog was so thick, you couldn't even see the mountains. I'm just a half a mile away. You couldn't see the mountains. And I'd come home, and my lungs were filled with this black stuff. And every time you breathe, oh man, it hurt inside. You probably experienced that back in the 50s too, if you lived around here at that time. But you see, that's going to be nothing compared to what is going to occur during the Great Tribulation when Satan opens the abyss and out belches this black smoke. But also out come locusts. Now we're going to see they're not real locusts, but they're described as locusts. They're demonic locusts. You ever seen in videos locusts literally filling the sky? If locusts fill the sky, I mean, you just have millions and millions of locusts all together. They can actually darken the sky. They can make things at daylight look like nighttime. That's how thick they can get. And they'll eat everything in sight. Anything that's green, they're going to eat. The last big plague of locusts took place back in 1952 in Iran, Iraq, Jordan, Saudi Arabia. These locusts not only darkened the sky, they ate every green thing that was on the ground. They devoured every plant right down to the bare ground. But as we said, these locusts are not that kind of locusts. They're demonic locusts. They're locusts from the pit of hell. They're locusts that come out of this pit where God placed them and has reserved them there in everlasting chains under the darkness for the judgment of the great day. But for a little while, 5 months in fact, we're going to see where they get a reprieve. They get released. Notice the authority given to the demonic locusts now. Verses 3 through 6. And to them was given power. As the scorpions of the earth have power, they were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. And in those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die and death will not flee from them. Remember now, these demonic locusts have been locked up in this pit since the days of Noah. If I've got my story right, that would be about what it is. Back in the days of Noah. And so they've been locked up for a long time. And now they're going to be released. And the anticipation is, because these locusts you're going to see have tails like scorpions, and they're going to be able to sting like a scorpion would sting. And Satan is so happy to have them released. But the thing you have to understand, like this is the good news now. I mean, this has been kind of sickening up to this point.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be a fun lesson.
Well, it's going to get fun right now. Right now it's going to get fun. See, here it is. And you'll be happy, happy, happy to hear this.
Bring it on.
God is going to turn the tables on these locusts. Notice what it says in the text. They cannot eat any green thing. They cannot harm the grass of the earth. Now remember, there was a third of the grass that was burned up. Now either it's regrown, or we're looking at the other two-thirds that wasn't burned up. But these locusts are deprived of eating grass. What do locusts want? They want every green thing. They can't. They can't eat it. And they cannot harm those who are sealed with the seal of God. We got too much volume here. I'm getting a lot of feedback.
I wasn't sure if that was the sound of the new air conditioner.
No, that's coming from right here.
Yeah.
Or coming from here. I don't know which. Okay, that's okay. I think that's better. So we find where they cannot harm those who have been sealed with the seal of God. Now we know the 144,000 were sealed with the seal of God. Remember 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes? And they are the evangelists, and they go out into the world and they win people from every tribe and nation and tongue. And remember that they were sealed where they could not be harmed during the time of their ministry. So we know the 144,000 can't be stung by these locusts. But I believe, and I think there's some reason to believe this, that even those people whom the 144,000 win to Christ cannot be harmed by these locusts either. Because they too, in a sense, are sealed. For example, 2 Timothy 2:19 says this, "Nevertheless, the firm foundation of God stands, having this seal. The Lord knows those who are His." Isn't that a comforting thought? The Lord knows those who are His. That's the seal. He knows who you are. He knows you are a believer. He has placed His Holy Spirit in you. And during the time of the tribulation, God knows those who are His, and He has sealed them as well, so that these demonic locusts, who have every intent under the authority of Satan, because he's the one who released them from the bottomless pit, thinking that they are going to eat all the grass and they are going to harm the 144,000 and all of those who have been sealed with the seal of God, which would be every single believer. No! They cannot harm them. So, who do they sting? They sting their own people. It says, the period by which they are active is 5 months. Now, why 5 months? 5 months is the lifespan of locusts. We're just talking about normal locusts. Normal locusts live 5 months, they're dead. These demonic locusts survive for 5 months. It's also interesting to note that it was 5 months that the Ark of Noah was afloat. What happened back in the days of Noah? Was it not the Nephilim that came into the world as a result of demonic angels materializing themselves and having sex with the women of the world that got God so angry that He decided to destroy the world with a flood? 5 months. The lifespan of locusts, 5 months. The period of time that the ark was afloat. Now, during the 5 month period, they were going to inflict torment on the people. Now, what's that like? What is it like to be stung by, in this case, a scorpion? Because you're going to see that the tails on these locusts, they have a scorpion's tail, and they sting like a scorpion would sting. I've never been stung by a scorpion. I hope you haven't either. But here's this. Somebody said, and I read this, doing some study on scorpion stings, that it is the worst pain that anybody can ever inflict from an animal or from a bug. Because when one is stung by a scorpion, they fall to the ground, they writhe in pain, they foam at the mouth, they grit their teeth, they scream. act like somebody who's demon possessed. I used to be involved with Young Life, and I was asked by Young Life leaders as well as Teen Challenge leaders if I would be part of a pastoral team that would help young people that got involved in Satan ritualism and obviously then were demon possessed. Because back in the 70s there were a lot of satanic cults in the San Gabriel Valley around the city of Glendora and on out into Rialto and Fontana and places like that. And so I got a call to go and visit this one place, and there was a young man lying on the floor. There were already two or three other pastors that beat me there, and they were praying over this man. I started praying over this man. This man was writhing on the ground. He was foaming at the mouth. He was gritting his teeth. And he was yelling vulgarities like you couldn't imagine. I mean, he was saying words that I never even heard before. And this went on seemingly for hours. I don't know how long. It just seemed like a long time. Because all of us pastors got absolutely worn out. We were emotionally drained. And he finally just settled down. And we picked him up and we put him on a chair. I don't know if he got delivered or not. I hope so. But it was that picture that I can't get out of my mind of him writhing in pain, just foaming at the mouth, gritting his teeth, the vulgarities. I was watching a worship service at Bethel Church in Redding, California. Pastor there is a man by the name of Don Johnson. If there is a demonic church in the United States today, it is Bethel Church. And part of this new apostolic reformation movement. If you can get a YouTube of this, you can get, just probably look it up and you get it right on your phone. That's how I saw it. And here they have people lying on the ground, shaking. Like this. And they're calling this the work of the Holy Spirit. These are people, these are young people that are screaming. I don't get it. And there's the man, you know, he's putting his hand on these people and they're just falling to the ground. And as they fall to the ground, I mean, it's not like what you see in a Benny Hinn kind of a falling on the ground. These people are literally writhing, shaking all over. What you are actually witnessing basically is what I witnessed with this guy lying on the ground, except I didn't see any of them foaming at the mouth, but they were shaking from their hands to their feet to their bodies to their heads. That's in a church. The false prophet has come. Now, the thing I want you to see here is notice the reaction of these people. That's verse 6. They're in such pain that they want to die, but they can't die. The text says they will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die and death will flee from them. These are people who have stubbornly rejected the gospel. Stop and think about this. These are people who've seen a third of the vegetation burn up. These are people who have seen a third of the sea life die. These are people who saw and maybe even tasted some of the polluted river water and well water. These are people who saw a third of the lights of the luminaries in the heavens go dim and people were freezing to death. These are people that have been stung by these demonic locusts and they're writhing in pain on the ground and they refuse to repent. See, there are some people that are just so stubborn. They have no hope. You know, you look at atheism today. What does atheism offer? Nothing. Nothing. But why won't people repent? Because their hearts... We're living in a time when people hate God. If Governor Brown ever bans the Bible in the state of California, which I doubt he'll be able to do, but even if he makes an attempt to do so, that man is an evil man who has no fear of God. And I don't mean fear in the sense of holding God in an awesome way. I mean he has no fear that God might even strike him dead. Pardon? I didn't. I can't understand you.
I asked how old he is.
How old who is?
Jerry Brown. Governor Brown.
I'm talking about Governor Brown. I don't know. He's in his 70s or 80s. What?
I just looked it up. It's not Brown that's trying to do something. There's a guy in the legislature who wants to ban things that.
Well, the article I read. That might be, but the article I read had it placed on Governor Brown. That may be a false. I'm just read it off the news tonight, but
I might want.
But anyway, the attempt is out there. Is that what you're saying?
Not for banning the Bible, no.
Well, okay. Well, that's good. That's good news. I'm glad to hear that. But I ought to get out and read what I did, but I won't do it right now. Let me just wrap this up, and we'll take a. Actually, I'm about done, so let me just finish this, and then we can have... I got another 10 minutes, and we're finished. Is that okay? Is that okay? You know, as I'm thinking about this, I went to see Les Mis years ago, Victor Hugo's rendition of Les Mis. Listen to some words from that. I dreamed a dream in time gone by when hope was high and life was worth living. I dreamed that love would never die. I dreamed that God would be forgiving. Then I was young and unafraid, and dreams were made and used and wasted. There was no ransom to be paid, no song unsung, no wine untasted. But the locusts came at night with their voices soft as thunder as they tear your hope apart. As they turn your dream to shame, I had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different from what it seems. Now life has killed the dream I dream. What a line from Les Mis. To just interject with what we're talking about tonight. It was the locusts who stole his dream. Notice the appearance of these demonic locusts. The shape of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns, something like gold, and their faces were like faces of men. They had hair like women's hair, and their teeth were like lion's teeth, and they had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. They had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. Now it should be obvious here that these are not real locusts. Notice that they have a king over them. And Solomon says in Proverbs 30:27 that locusts don't have a king over them. They don't have somebody ruling over them. But these locusts have a ruler over them. His name is Apollyon, which means the destroyer. And so the first thing we learn about their appearance is they are like horses prepared for battle. They're warlike, they're defiant, they're armed, they're prepared to fight. Their heads are crowned with something like gold. So they have these victor crowns on their head, thinking they're going to be victorious in whatever they do. They think themselves to be invincible. Notice their hair is like women's hair, suggesting perhaps the ability to seduce men to sin. Their faces are like the faces of men, suggesting they are intelligent beings who even possess people. Their teeth are like lions' teeth, suggesting they are frightful creatures. They have breastplates like breastplates of iron, suggesting they have a strong defense. Their wings make the sound of many chariots, suggesting they travel very fast. And their tails like scorpions, and they sting in their tails, suggesting they inflict great pain. So when you summarize what we have just seen from the text, these demonic locusts, they're warriors ready for battle. They are seducers of men. They are intelligent beings. They are frightful. They are able to defend themselves. They can travel rapidly, and they inflict great pain. And they have one single purpose, and that is their power was to hurt men for 5 months. But were they ever deceived? Because God just turns the table right on. They were going to inflict pain on the 144,000. They were going to inflict pain on any of the saints of God. But they ended up inflicting pain on Satan's own people. God is using Satan against himself. You're going to see next week when we talk about the second woe that God is going to do the same thing. Satan can't accomplish what he wants to accomplish, and so God turns Satan against Satan. And Satan fights Satan. But that's next week. I'll leave you curious until then. What am I seeing in all of this? Let's just wrap it up. I go back to the prayer of the martyrs under the altar of incense. These martyrs who have come out of the great tribulation, these martyrs who are praying, "How long, O Lord, will you be before you bring vengeance upon those who spilled our blood?" And remember, God says, "I just want you to be patient because there has not been a certain number that has to die before I bring such vengeance. It hasn't occurred yet." But now, with the sounding of the fifth trumpet, and the Lord taking off from his key ring the key of Hades and death and handing that key over to Satan and saying, "Satan, you now have authority over the bottomless pit." And Satan releases all that smoke and those demonic locusts with scorpion-like tails that can sting, thinking, "I'm going to get all of God's people." No, God says, "You're not. You're going to sting your own. You're going to sting those who have been martyring my people. Vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord." And God is using Satan in the vengeful way to answer the prayers of the martyrs. And so verse 12 says, "One woe is past. Behold, still two more woes are coming after this." Well, that's it. That's the first woe. Next week, we're going to talk about a demonic army that comes from east of the Euphrates. They come right out of Asia. Who is that army? Well, I'm not going to tell you tonight, but we'll spend next week on that.